It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolforth. Today's show is about one of my favorite places, Halibut Cove. The Cove is a tiny private community on the south side of Kachemak Bay, half an hour boat ride from Homer. It's an arts community with boardwalks and a waterway instead of a road, a place made for beautiful and calming visits to the bay and Kachemak Bay State Park. I went to Halibut Cove with a portable recorder and talked with Clem Tillion, who founded the community after World War II, and to the owners of a lodge, water taxi, and a restaurant, who can help anyone, regardless of ability, enjoy the marine and mountain wilderness. Finally, at the end of the show, we'll hear about a new planning process for the park as the state of Alaska thinks about the future of Kachemak Bay and the lands there. So now I'm with Clem Tillion, who is one of our sort of Alaska, well, not sort of, but really one of our Alaska pioneers who... And I'm at his beautiful house on Ishmaeloff Island, which is part of the community of Halibut Cove, which Clem is the father of, the community, and kind of the feudal lord, because he actually has owned most of the community too. And he's smiling, so I don't think he minds being thought of that way. So I've heard your story before, Clem, but it's one of my favorite stories. So you fought your way through the Pacific. You ended up in Alaska, and you're bumming around, and you're a young man, and somehow or other you found your way down here to Kachemak Bay.
Well, I started with a government-paid vacation on Guadalcanal when I was 17. Ended up hanging out in the villages and ended up with malaria and quite a few other things, and was suggested that I go to Alaska till I get rid of this. My foxhole buddy had sent for some stuff, and among it was the Kenai Peninsula's description. So I thought we'd come take a look on it. Left Anchorage and walked to Seldovia, down to Homer, and then across and on in 1947. And I saw all the stuff here and decided that's what I wanted. So I came back and bought a dory.
In those days, Seldovia was kind of the big city around here.
Oh, yes, it was 800 people, and even Kenai got all its groceries. Iliamna, everything got their groceries in Seldovia. Uh-huh. They were transshipped to Homer. I got into that when I got my first boat, hauling stuff back and forth.
So you got your dory?
I got my dory, and I came up along the coast taking sights on the moon to find out how much sun you'd get. And I was looking for a good source of water and a harbor. And some sunshine.
And you were already fishing at that point. You knew you wanted to be here, and you were looking for a place to make your home.
Yes, and I didn't pick Seldovia because it was a wild town at the time. And I didn't want to raise kids there, which was pretty arrogant. I didn't even have a girlfriend. But I came back from the war with one thing in mind. I wanted a secure place to live, a secure income, a wife, children. In fact, when I took my wife out on our first date and proposed to her, my intentions are honorable. I want a wife and at least three children. And she said, for openers, what's your first name?
You didn't scare her off, though.
No, she said I kept changing colors, so she thought there was a little more to it than that. But that's another story. I came up, and what I found was that some old Norwegian would be living in just about any real good place. Halibut Cove, which I came to in early 1948, was a ghost town. It had been 1,000 people packing herring, which collapsed in 1928. But they weren't families. The girls came from Scotland to pack the herring, the fishermen from Scandinavia to catch them. So it was just empty buildings, rotten, falling down, and six old bachelors and one Scandinavian couple from Petersburg. He had a drinking problem, so they were hiding out here. So I bought a little place for $25 a barabra and lived there for a while, looking around, knowing this is where I wanted to be. Then I had a chance to buy the quitclaim deed. And see, if I got the quitclaim deed, then I could use my GI homestead. But you couldn't homestead within 150 yards of an existing building unless you had the permit under the Homestead Act. So you couldn't jump somebody else's claim.
Hmm. And so this was this whole Ishmaelhaf Island, which is just this paradise, where there's this little channel between the mainland and the island, and so beautiful now. It must have been, I mean, must have just, I can just imagine coming and finding this place and hardly anybody here.
Oh, I couldn't believe it in many ways. I lived on the isthmus down here between the two islands, and then I got a chance. Bob Morse had bought the estate of Charlie Engstrom that died the year I came here, and one old Swede lived on the island here. He later became the grandpa for my children.
Yeah.
And I just had a chance to buy it. And it was a lot of money. It was $1,400, which you have to understand, in-state was 2-cent stamp, and 3 cents was interstate. So just multiply it and you know what, you know, it'd be about $170,000 today, today's dollars. And I went to Squeaky Anderson, who I was fishing for, and he'd been the beach master at Iwo Jima, and, you know, he got another CB, he was laughing at me, and I said, can you loan me the money? He said, I'm already covering you for your boat. I don't loan on land, but I have a friend in Anchorage that does those kind of things, and I'll write you a letter. So he wrote a letter, and I took it up, and the friend was Elmer Rasmussen of the National Bank of Alaska, but he was, in those days, it was so small that Elmer made every loan himself. He couldn't afford any mistakes then. And after the war, it was just kind of chaotic. And I came in, this cold-eyed Swede looked at the letter and looked at me, and he said, do you have collateral? I said, I have the quitclaim deed, and he looked at it, and he said, oh, signed by Juanita Anderson, I know her. How are you going to pay for it? I said, I have a job in Fairbanks driving the water wagon in town for the winter. And he said, how long will it take to pay the bill? And I said, I can do it in 2 years. He said, no, it's going to take you at least three. And then he went back to writing. And I said, what do I do? He said, go to the counter and pick up the check. And so I bought the island. And 3 years later, when I paid it off, he said, well, you're on time. Here, you should keep this letter from Captain Anderson for your records. And I brought it home, and when I opened it up, it was, he's a crazy kid, Elmer, but he does catch fish. That's all it said.
That's all it took to get started.
That's all it took to get it started. And years later, I realized that Elmer Rasmussen always looked like the cold Swede and did wonderful things for people without them knowing it, in many cases.
Yeah.
And I got involved with him in the fisheries later on, but that's another story.
So then your wife, Diana, was willing to go along with you on this adventure, and you moved out here and started trying to build a community.
Well, you know, that came after I got the wife. I proposed to an old lady, really, thought that Diana and I would make a pair. So every time I crossed the bay, they invited Diana, who was another, the old lady was an artist too, over to dinner. And she thought something was wrong with her because I wouldn't look at her while I was eating. I couldn't have swallowed if I'd been looking at her. And finally, it wasn't taking, and Ada got thoroughly annoyed and said, ask her out. And I said, oh, she wouldn't go with me. Ask her out, you idiot. So I brought her here to Halibut Cove and showed her around and said, this is where I'm going to live, and this is what I want to do. And I want to marry you. My intentions are honorable. I want a wife and at least three children. And she said, well, for openers, what's your first name? And then I went to her parents and asked permission to court their daughter. I was considered somewhat of a wild man, and because I took off into the woods with nothing, you know. And her parents not only said no, but hell no, and put her on the next steamer outside and sent her to her grandmother in California. And as she left, she handed me a little piece of paper with her grandmother's address. So I knew I wasn't a lost cause. I still have a bit of a shock. So I wrote to her. Pretty graphic, because I hadn't had all that much education when it came to penmanship. It was pretty basic. And she and her sister trying to figure out what I was saying. And I sent her a ring, one strip of halibut. Pretty good rock, so I knew who had the inn upstairs. And she had a brother-in-law in the Air Force, and she talked him into enlisting her as family. And she flew back to Fort Richardson. There wasn't an airport in Anchorage as such, except, you know, the small field. And I met her. And the next time her folks saw us, she was Mrs. Tillion.
Yeah.
And I hope pregnant, but that took a year. Not from lack of trying, I would say. And I brought her to a two-room log house with not even running water, well, not even a sink. And she stuck with me, but I overdrew my bank account on our honeymoon. And the banker in Homer said, "Diana, your new husband has overdrawn his bank account. What do I do?" She said, "Take the money I made from the Cannery Bakery last summer and put it in his account." And then she said, "Clem, can I see that checkbook?" It was 50 years before I saw it again. She said, "You catch him. I better take care of it from here."
She took care of the money. So, but you... it was pretty rough living over here in those days. Nobody else around, and you were raising kids just in a cabin, and hardly anybody else here. And you were, but you wanted to have people here, right?
Yes, and so once I got the land and got that all settled, then I offered free land to anybody with four or more children to get a community going. And but I no house trailers, no tar paper shacks. You had to come forward with something that was usable. And the big lodge down here that the Joneses have, that beautiful white place, that's one of the, that's grandchildren, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It worked. I got cheated a few times and then got overpaid other times. And what I hadn't thought about was the fact that being Yankee, my idea of what kind of building you have, I had a cousin come up from Maine, one of the island, he said, "You know, this looks like a piece of Penobscot Bay just put down here."
It does, yeah.
And I said, "I never thought about it. I guess you take a beaver out of the Atlantic and drop him in the Pacific, the dam is going to look the same."
Right.
It was successful. The population dropped drastically when the king crab collapsed.
Mm-hmm.
The cod fishery that goes on now has to be delivered daily, and so Homer's the port. There was no port in Homer then.
And nowadays it's really a tourist community, and a lot of summer folks, and then tourists coming over and eating at the restaurant. And how do you feel about that? That's not exactly what you expected to have happen.
Well, no, but I wanted a community. Whether it's tourism or fish or what it is didn't really bother me one way or another. I went as the pilot boat service, furnishing boats for that when it began. And this was a ice-free port, so that was a good place to work out of. But basically, my oldest daughter that has the Sultry restaurant and the Danny J was the first woman to get master's papers in Alaska.
Which is for driving big vessels.
That 100-ton or better.
Mm-hmm.
And she graduated from Cal Poly in California, her degree in animal science, you know, licensed to inoculate, inseminate, and castrate. And so she came home and, you know, she raised baby seals for nymphs, and she has a herd of horses, and and she and her husband built a restaurant and the stretch of boardwalk, and it's been written up in the Washington or the New York Times and stuff. And so she's quite successful. The next daughter was Dartmouth Medical School, and she saw what it was like here when there wasn't any doctors.
Mm-hmm.
And she was working at Bethel. She was a marine biologist. And she was saying, "Daddy, they don't need biologists. They need doctors." And I said, "But there's a shortage of fish and a surplus of people." But she didn't see it that way. And then did 3 years at Hennepin County Hospital. Mm-hmm. And married a boy she'd met when she was working at the legislature while I was in the legislature. And name was Sam Cotton, who was one of the Young Turks that was, well, he'd actually done 2 hitches in Vietnam. He wasn't any, you know, mm-hmm. but born and raised Alaskan. And now he's Commissioner of Fish and Game.
And they've got this island over here that I've heard called Sam and Martha's Vineyard.
Yeah, it's a... acre and 4/5, but with boardwalk that goes completely around it. Yeah. So it's flowers and gardens, and it's Martha's place to retreat. Though I noticed Sam Cotton, her husband's there now. She's doing the emergency room at Homer Hospital today. Mm. I think she works too hard and bills too much. Mm-hmm. But and then my son went to Admiral Farragut Naval Academy in New Jersey when he was, well, 13 when he left, but 14 almost. And then California Maritime. And he's the one with the big license. Mine's a tugboat license, 700 ton, but his is any ship, any ocean.
Mm-hmm. And they all basically ended up right around here, which is...
Oh, they all did. When my brother-in-law got mm-hmm. killed, I took his children. And, you know, Sydney... runs the boat for Marion, runs the tour boat. And then she does the run in whale watching in the Big Island in the winter time. Mm-hmm. She's married to a bishop, one of the old families there. And her son was married last winter in Kauai. I went over and did the marriage. And she did a hula in front of him. That was kind of fun to watch.
Yeah. So it's kind of everything kind of worked out the way you planned all the way back almost 70 years ago.
I thought it was going to be more based on commercial fishing, mm-hmm. and that didn't work. But the basic idea behind it, that it's a good place to live. I keep a playground out here because if you don't hear the sound of children playing, there's no tomorrow.
Yeah,
that's the sound of tomorrow. It's not that I hold the little things in my lap while they drizzle. It doesn't interest me. But about 5 years of age, I'm starting to get interested. You know, they're, can I have a cookie, Grandpa? I said, all right, but you have to pick the one. And you can only have one. And they have to learn. They look in there, and there's all this selection. And, you know, they can sit there for half an hour picking out which one they're going to have.
Well, thanks, Clement. Thanks for your hospitality for myself and for all the folks who have come and enjoyed your community here. It's just a little Shangri-La.
Well, I like people. That uh-huh. part is not hard.
Yeah. All right. Well, it's Clem Tellian. I'm Charles Wilforth. It's Outdoor Explorer. Stay with us as we continue. We're back. It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolforth, and we're in Halibut Cove today learning about what you can do if you decide to come down from Anchorage and do a weekend or even longer to visit this really, really beautiful community. And right now I'm with Tammy and Carl Jones. They have a business called Cove Country Cabins, and they also have a water taxi called Bay Roamers. And they built this incredible house, which is kind of looks like a lighthouse from the outside. And as I would go by in my boat, I would see one little piece be added to it at a time. Whole community would come together and raise the walls and put up these, it's a post and beam construction, which is super impressive. I mean, just worth the trip just to see this place. So really, really gorgeous. And I guess, is it totally done, Carl?
Not quite. It'll never be done, but
yeah, that's the way it goes when you build your own place, right? You never finish. But so how many you have people come in here and eat in the main hall, and then you have cabins for them? How many folks do you have here at one time?
We have 3 rental rooms in here. Then we have the 3 cabins. Uh-huh. So people come and go in the dining room, and the overnight guests, you know, have breakfast and come down anytime that they want in the inn. dining room.
So. Yeah, yeah. And you kind of put it together all as a package, so they don't need to really know anything.
Nope, I do it all for them, put it together. They tell me what they are interested in, and I kind of tell them where, what time they can do it and when they, where they should be at. Uh-huh. And,
I mean, there's a lot to do around here. There's the Kachemak Bay State Park trails. Is that sort of the main, one of the main activities people do?
One of the main things, that mm-hmm. and the kayaking. We work with guided kayaking, and but the hiking, there's so much hiking trails over there. And, you know, people can go 2 or 3 days doing different trails, you know.
Yeah, and so the water taxi, you just, like, drop them off at the trailhead, and then when they're ready to come back, and I guess with cell phones, they could, like, call you at any time, right?
Well, basically, but we always have a pickup time, mm-hmm. so that...
Yeah, in case it goes bad.
Yes, yeah, yep. Yeah. We always, yep, that's my job, is make sure they get out of the park, too, you know?
Yeah.
So,
so it seems like one of the most popular trails over there is that the Saddle Trail, where it's just pretty easy, a couple of miles, and you get to a glacier and a lake, and it's really beautiful.
Yes, the Glacier Spit, we like to drop them off on the Glacier Spit Trail, where they go up to the Glacier Lake and then back down the Saddle Trail. Mm-hmm. And it makes a nice loop, and it's less, you don't go back over the same trail as much, uh-huh. you know, so that's a wonderful hike. And I tell people 3 hours, they can do it in a lot less, but I don't know why anybody wants to run through it. You know, they just do the loop, and then there's all the side trails that they can do.
Yeah.
You know, so they can.
It's so pretty up there, too. I mean, if you've got, you know, kids, you can throw rocks at the icebergs,
yes.
and if it's sunny like this, it's just totally, totally lovely. And then I've always enjoyed hiking up the other direction where you get to the tram, the hand-operated tram, to get across the Greek River, and if you're a little bit more ambitious, you can go way up in the mountains over there.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah. So do you find that most people who come are super outdoorsy and sort of fit, or do you get, like, what's the range of the people who come here?
I'm going to say they're middle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have both extremes. You know, as far as the people in the hike, we've had people that are in their 70s, 80s, you know, with toddlers, and uh-huh. they do the hike. You know, it just ranges, you know. We just allow enough time for them to do it. You know,
right.
But yeah, you don't have to be any special shape to do the hike. Yeah.
Well, the thing about Halibut Cove is you don't, I mean, you can come over here and just look at the galleries and walk up and down the boardwalk, yeah. and look at the horses and
yes.
go up and look at the gazebo and stuff like that. So pretty much anybody can do that.
Yes. And they can just sit on the deck and have their tea, you know, they don't have
yeah.
to move. Yep.
Yeah. It's still, it's all outdoors.
Yeah.
So, Carl, I want to learn about building this place, because it is truly one of the most impressive structures I've ever seen, certainly that was built by an individual. And these beams are just enormous. And my friend who brought me over here was saying that you actually, like, did this with chisel and hand tools and sort of did it all yourself.
Yes, it's all pegged together, you know, post-and beam style. And we got these timbers. They came from the North Slope. They were bridge timbers that were not untreated. And we picked up about 60,000 board feet of timbers, and then they were 10 by 20 by 32 foot, and we split them with a chainsaw, and we made 10 by 10s out of them, and, you know, went from there. So.
Wow, yeah, well, I'm noticing that there's not a lot of cracks and checks in them, and I guess that's because you weren't using, like, green wood.
No, it's not green. It's old wood. It's old growth, Doug fir.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So how many years did it take you to build this place?
Well, I figured we'd be done in about 3 years, and it's wound up being about 15 now. Yeah, but we have to work in the summer and, you know, make a living. So, you know, the time that we could work on it was not the best.
Yeah. Well, and it's so creative in its design, with the thing that goes all the way to the top that looks like a lighthouse. Is that like a functional room up there at the top, or what is it?
That's part of the unfinished portion, mm-hmm. and it's a top house. This place was modeled after a building in San Francisco Bay called the East Brother Light Station.
Oh, neat.
And we took and rearranged some of it, and so it would fit on our location. And, you know, the tower being the center point, we put it on the front instead of the back. But eventually we're going to put a light up there.
Oh,
and
cool.
We'll have a library, and we have a old staircase, circular staircase, out of an old lighthouse that we're putting up in there to the turret. And it'd be a real observation point up there.
you know, if you ever finished, like, what would you like dream about, right? What would be your focus of your life? You've got to keep working on it forever, right?
Maintenance.
No, you're not smiling.
It'll be maintenance.
Yeah, that's right. Probably, at some point you get to where the maintenance takes over and you're not actually making any progress, right?
No doubt. Yeah, there's always something to build. You know, the shop, I've got some boats in mind that I would like to build. And we've always done that, and it's what we'll be doing till I die, I guess.
Yeah. So you basically started out here as a kid in Halibut Cove. I mean, you've been here for a long time. Your folks sort of settled down here at some point?
Yeah, they came up in 1953 and homesteaded up the head of the bay, and were up there for a couple of years, and then their cabin burned down, and then they moved. They discovered Halibut Cove and moved over here. So,
was your family one of the, I was talking to Clem Tillion earlier in the show, and he was saying that he made a deal that folks who would come here with families, he'd give them land because he wanted to populate it and create a town. Was that your story as well?
Yes. A small portion of this property did come from Clem Tillion. And even though he probably said it was given, it did not come cheap. And then in another part, the 5 acres, was open to entry property that my dad filed on. Uh-huh. So
tell me about your water taxi business. Is it? It sounds like you're taking visitors to look at the trails and stuff, and kayaking and stuff like that. Is that the main thing you're doing?
Yeah. Well, we have that Halibut Cove Triangle that we do, and you know, we will take people on like 2 or 3 hour tours if they want to do that. And we're pretty darn busy in the summer. Kind of enjoy it. Meet a lot of people. Everybody's usually happy. So, yeah. It's fun.
It's such a gorgeous place to be. So we didn't really talk about kayaking. What's the kayaking setup here?
We work with St. Augustine's out of Peterson Bay, primarily for doing guided kayak, where people leave Homer with them, and then we pick them up from Peterson Bay and then take them to the park and then back to the Saltry, and then they go over to Homer on the Danny. But I'm the one that puts it all together. I have to keep track of them all, and so, you know, they can call myself or St. Augustine's, and then we'll put it together for them.
There's sort of a super luxury wilderness lodge here in the Cove, but other than that, you're kind of the main lodging here, right? I mean,
there's a couple that are full service, yes, you know, and very high end, yes, you know. And I think we're the middle of the road, but we have all types of people, all walks of life come, even in our cabins. There, it's amazing the different people and the return people that we get there, you know. So
yeah, well, I had the impression you were focused more on sort of regular people, not only the people who can afford to pay like $1,000 or something.
I like our normal people.
So, maybe a little easier to get along with, right?
They're all pretty good.
Well, I mean, people come here, and I think that's kind of the tension of the city sort of drifts away, right? Because you're in this beautiful spot, and you know, the water's in front of you. And I think the most, it kind of captures people's imagination to be in a community where the water is the center of it rather than the road. People get around that way.
It's amazing. What's fun is all different people coming together and visiting, that how they really do have a lot in common, you know, that they get together. And having the common dining room that gives them that chance to do that, you know. So.
Yeah.
It's fun, you know.
So what's it like with, I would think this would also be, this community would be heaven for kids, because you see like kids like paddling around on kayaks or rowboats or whatever, and there's no, you know, it's sort of so outdoorsy and sort of, and it must have been like that for you, Carl, when you were a kid.
Oh yeah, it's great. You know, we'd follow the tide in and follow the tide out and check out all the little critters and sand dollars, and yeah, there was always something to do. Yeah. It's a great place for kids.
Yeah.
We really enjoy having kids. So. Yeah.
And we encourage families. Our cabins are set up, you know, for families, and you know, we have areas that are family friendly, like toddler friendly, you know. But everybody needs to be aware that this is wilderness, you know.
Yeah.
And so it's fun for them. They fish off the beach and off the floats and yeah.
I'm always curious how you make it work practically, because there's no grocery store. I mean, you got to go across the bay to get your, you can't like forget something. And then for like their water and sewer and everything, it's totally kind of separate. Is it, is there like a community water system or something?
Everybody's pretty much got their own system, or there's a group of people that have a system. And, you know, we have 3,000 feet of line that goes to the mainland and up a creek. And we have a water treatment system in the basement, and you know, we're like super treated. You know, with chlorine drip and UV filter, and then DEC approved septic system. So
boy, that makes life so much more complicated than somebody running a business in town, right?
It does. It, and the logistics of getting it all done was very challenging, you know. So
it's almost like you're building your own, I mean, you're building your own utilities along with everything else.
Yeah. It is. And then the grounds to keep too, you know. But yeah, try not to destroy the land to put in the system, you know.
Well, I was looking at your flowers, and your irises are huge. I've never seen anything like it before. Is that just because of this crazy year we're having?
It's amazing year for the flowers. That's all I can say. It's absolutely gorgeous. Yeah. I mean, everything is just, you know, blossomed, and I'm very happy with the irises. Yep.
So if you're going to come down to Halibut Cove, this is the year to do it, because it is, I mean, if a day like this is like one in a million. So thank you so much, you guys. Tammy and Carl Jones, they have Cove Country Cabins here in Halibut Cove. Thanks for being with me on Outdoor Explorer.
You bet.
Thank you.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. Find the show anytime as a free podcast in the iTunes store, or connect with us online at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Woolforth, and we're doing the show today in Halibut Cove, which is this little fairyland of water and of the beautiful homes and opportunities to do stuff outdoors. And right now I'm with Marion Beck, who grew up here. We already heard from Clem Tully and her dad. And she has this amazing restaurant and has for many years called The Sultry, which has been written up in the New York Times and heavens knows where else. And is a unique restaurant because it comes with a boat ride, which means that you show up in the Homer Harbor and come over here and spend the day here. And let me just start, Marion, like, when did you have that idea? Because I think most people are like, okay, that's never going to work.
Well, actually, I was on the board of directors for the Alaska Visitors Association. And in 1982 is when I decided I was going to do this, because I had actually owned the Danny J and by 81, and I was sure, quite sure, it was not going to make any money serving tea somewhere. So this idea came from my college degree when I went to college, Cal Poly University, and there were all these little eateries with handmade plates along Highway 1. So I decided I wanted one of those. And it does seem kind of strange to be way out here. And I honestly had never worked in a restaurant, so I probably may not have done it otherwise, but it was, turned out quite well, and we got great coverage. Tom Keziah put us in Alaska Magazine, and we were on the cover, and this woman, Joan Jackson, New York City, saw us on the cover, and she was the producer for Good Morning America. So they came out here, and the Today Show, and different things, because this was a very odd idea, art on the face of the wilderness. And my compatriots at Alaska Visitors Association thought I definitely would fail. But anyways, perseverance, I think that's, or persistence, one or the other.
Well, part of it is like you wanted to live in this out-of-the-way community, and you wanted to paint, and you wanted to live your lifestyle. And so it's like, how am I going to make money there and live there, right?
Yeah, that's exactly the, and actually everything here, it's like my boat, is a sculpture. The restaurant is an art statement. My plates that my husband and I do together are art plates. And we situated our restaurant so that it was, the face of the wilderness is our handrail on the restaurant. So then you just sit there and look at the wilderness from art.
The Danny J is kind of a special boat. It's a wooden boat. It looks like a real classic. The guests mostly sit outside on the way across the bay.
Absolutely.
Tell me about the boat.
The boat was an Army launch, and they were called J boats, and they were surplused up here, hundreds of them in Alaska when the Army came up to Alaska to fight the war in the Aleutians, and then that left, and they left all these little boats up here. And I actually grew up fishing with my dad on one. My husband Dave and I fished one in Cook Inlet. And the Danny J got rebuilt by a guy named Earl Cooper way back in the day, 1965, and went into Dad's pilot boat business. And then I bought my uncle out of the pilot boat business and then traded the Danny J for my stock.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And it was, I mean, it's not a super practical boat for anything commercial other than what you're doing, because it's like not super fast, it's not super sleek, but it's like got tons of character.
Yep, it's not super fast, but it's a really good ride, and they're really good sea boats. We've been out in 15-foot seas, and our boat was called the Also, and we fished it for 9 years in Cook Inlet at 7 knots.
Patience.
Yeah. You couldn't run from fish too easily because you couldn't go anywhere. You just threw your net in the water and hope for the best.
Tell me about your visitors and some of the practical part about how folks who want to come here, what do they do? How do they get, you know, make their reservations and stuff?
Well, we have an online booking reservation system, and we have our own little kiosk. It's really small but efficient. So people can call, or the best way is to go online to thesaltery.com, and there'll be a reservation button that you can push, and then you can send your information that about you, and we can call you back or email them back, and the receipt comes over email too.
Oh, neat. So they pay for the boat ride over, and then they pay separately for their meal?
Absolutely, yes, because there's a lot of, we still have our original menu on the menu. The dishes to share is what we opened our restaurant with, the combo platter, and our smoked salmon pate and pickled salmon, and all that's still traditional, as well as the seafood chowder, bread, and chocolate cheesecake. That's all I had when we opened up. But we salted a lot of fish. We salted our first 500 fish storm-bound in the Nanelchuk Harbor. And so that's what we make our pickled fish with.
Oh, yeah. Neat. And when they come over, there's time for them to look at the gallery and stuff. And people may not realize that you've actually built an art gallery here in this roadless community, you know, that is essentially a private community, right?
I mean, it is a private community, yeah, for sure. And we're really careful about that and respect each other about that. We started a group gallery in 82, I believe was a year, on Homer Spit. That was Halibut Cove's experience gallery. A couple of the ladies that came from Anchorage were artists in Anchorage, so they kind of helped us get that way. And then we didn't like being on Homer Spit. We were where Salty Girls is now. And then we decided we wanted to have our own building, and we have 17 artists. And all of us have grown up together, and we had the same people that mentored us. And then we've taken on, our mission is to mentor our young people, and Chelsea Jones, Carl and Tammy's daughter, was our, she started last year. And so then we give her advice and how to market and, you know.
Yeah, and they have the cabins where folks can stay if they want to spend
absolutely
the night and hook it up with a Saltery visit and all that.
Uh-huh. We do that all the time. And they have their own little spot where they could have breakfast and everything else.
Yeah, so neat. So your mother was an amazing artist, and she worked, one of the things she did was work in Octopus Ink, which created these beautiful sepia sort of look kind of like pen and ink, but they're also kind of like watercolors. And is her stuff still for sale too?
There's prints of it.
A little bit.
A little bit. Not so much. But as time goes on, you know, that's the way it goes. It's like Alex Combs, who I worked in his studio for 8 years. And time goes by, but I have a huge collection of his paintings and my mom's paintings. And
Yeah, and there's so much beautiful art here. And what is it about this place? I mean, I could give my own answer, but you're an actual artist. What is it about this place that it seems to have inspired so many artists?
I think we were in an era, this is, you know, life, the road came to Homer in 1953, so this place is pretty new. When we were all in our 20s, there were over 50 of us here, and we had great artists that mentored us. And we seemed to be artistic already, the people who were attracted here. And so, yeah, we worked hard at it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and it's so, I mean, it's so amazingly beautiful, too. I mean, you're maybe you've lived here all your life, so maybe it doesn't, like, strike you. But every time anybody else comes here, it's like, oh, my gosh, this is the most beautiful place on earth.
This is the most beautiful place on earth. And I've been to a lot of places on earth. And I think that's why it's been not hard work to build something really beautiful to respect the place that we live.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's more, I think it's... It looks like it's part of the landscape. I think that was what the important part was.
I think most of the people who've built in Halibut Cove have followed that sort of understanding that it needs to fit in with the place and with the sort of theme of the community.
Uh-huh. Well, it's tidy, and people take a lot of pride in their things here. Well, we just threw away, you know, 6 truckloads of old nets and engines.
Yeah, and so there's still a little bit of that marine thing going on here, but it's mostly tourism now or just visitors who come for the summer.
It is. A lot of visitors live here in the summertime, and it is fun to share this. Many people come 6 or more times a summer and share this with us. Yeah.
The state park seems like a huge attraction as well, and I wonder if do folks come and do a hike and then come and have a cocktail at the Saltry?
They do with Carl Jones. We don't really have charter boats coming here because we have a saturation limit of about 72 people, and that sounds funny, but that's the way it is. And so
if you get more, it's just going to diminish the experience.
It totally diminishes the experience, and I don't want to do that. So Carl and I've worked closely together on his water taxi business, the small, and the park, and the triangle, which is a really sweet deal. Yeah.
So it must be really challenging to run a restaurant in a location like this. For one thing, your workers have to live here. You have to provide housing for them for the entire summer. And you want to keep the quality level really high, but obviously it's going to be different people every year, or at least a lot of the time, if they have to live here the entire summer.
We have our right now, for quite a while, we have a Park City connection. Uh-huh. So they're snowboarder skiers. And I've been really super lucky over the years and have had, for the most part, super good luck with people's taste in food. I have a mission statement about the food, and everybody's been very respectful of it. We don't do fried food. We don't do meats. We have a pork from up north, raised on Delta barley. So we keep regional food and clean food and pretty food.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it seems to me you're way, way ahead of your time. I remember in the early 80s coming here and, like, it's sushi? What's that? You know, and what is this? This is totally weird. But now it's like you were way ahead of the curve, right? Because now sort of locally sourced and healthy foods and minimally cooked foods are the thing.
That's true. I was way ahead of my time because I was in California when that was already happening in the early 70s. And somehow it kind of fell through a hole out there in the world during the 80s and 90s. Mm-hmm. And there's fresh food is, you can't have good food if it's not fresh. And you have to understand where it came from. And the shellfish growers here, Greg and Weatherly Bates, they produce a spotless product, and we're really lucky to have them right here in our community, and they deliver. And so, you know, if you really, and fresh fish, I grew up on fresh fish, and fish fresh is always delicious, any kind of fish.
Yeah.
And not fresh, even the best fish is not going to be delicious.
Yeah.
And people have the chance to come out here and have super delicious fish. Because I'm buying all the time. I'm running around like a mad hatter, and I know everybody who has anything.
So and the fishing boats are pulling right up to your dock and are unloading in front of the restaurant.
Well, my husband does. He brings all our salmon, And I just bought 26 big salmon from a guy from down the coast who has set net sites here in Halibut Cove. Uh-huh. And I just happened to be in the harbor, and I saw him pull in, and I said, "Wow, do you have any salmon?" He said he had 26, and I'll take them.
And the oysters and the mussels are coming from right here in the cove.
Yes, they are. And
they're unbelievable.
They're unbelievable. The Greg and Weatherly put a lot of effort in washing their oysters constantly. Mm. Their product throughout their growing season, which is about 2 years, sometimes longer, but about two. We have really high plankton here. And they have their oyster farms out in the super high current area. It's hard to work, but their product is superior because of it, I believe.
I think so. And I think that in general, the Kachemak Bay oysters are fantastic if you get them from the co-op on the spit. I've never had any. They weren't great.
Yeah.
But I had, all of your food is great, but I had a Bloody Mary here that absolutely, it was the best. I mean, I like rent people, like, we got to go back there and get Bloody Marys. And it's so spicy, and it's like got a whole garden of stuff in it.
Yeah.
Do you come up with that, or do you have a great bartender who came up with it?
We have real bartenders here. I was really a terrible bartender because I never learned how to do it. So I had a book, and I have to read my book and do my drinks. But we have actual mixologists here now that we're all grown up.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Do you grow some of your food here on the island?
Mm-hmm. We have a really big garden, and we're harvesting kale from last year right now, and we're getting most of our product from the farmer's market. Mm-hmm. We have one of our old Halibut Cove girls goes to the farmer's market. She lives in Homer now. And so our garden is about 8 inches tall, and it's all leaf stuff for the most part. We don't do roots out here because we need to roll through leaf stuff more often. But we will have a lot of kale here pretty soon in our garden.
And tell me about, this isn't about the restaurant, but tell me about your horses and your sort of, that's a whole, I look at your life and you've got so many things going on. And that's something that people enjoy looking at when they come here too.
Well, of course I love horses. I bred Morgan horses forever. There's something about a horse that finishes the sentence. And I, they're really beautiful horses, and I bring them in every day so everybody can look at them. And, it's just the frosting on the cake, I guess.
Yeah. So it seems like this is something that virtually anybody can do and get outdoors and get on the water. And it's pretty inexpensive compared to other ways to get on the water. And I imagine you get a ton of people here who maybe have never been anywhere like this before.
Every day. We even had, and this is not my, on our 30th anniversary a couple of years ago for our restaurant, we had all these people came from the past, and everybody had their quote that to see who could win the best quote of what we had heard from a visitor. Toni Morey at the gallery, she won. She somebody walked into the gallery kind of shocked, and are we still in Alaska?
Yeah, or where did you think
we?
You
were?
Where did that boat take us? Maybe we're in Russia now, right?
Oh, yeah. But there's a lot of pleasure of giving people the element of surprise. Mm-hmm. And it's like having the baby grand in the gallery. Somebody can sit down and play the baby grand anytime they want to if they're on the tour and they're a musician. It's just like an extra little thing. Yeah.
And they're on a little island out in Alaska. Yeah. Cool. Well, thank you so much, Marion Beck. She's the owner of the Saltry Restaurant. You can find out about it at her website, or just go through ours at outdoorexplorer.org, and you'll find a link there. Thanks so much for having us here.
Well, thanks. Yeah.
Stay with us as Outdoor Explorer continues. Thanks for tuning in to Outdoor Explorer. Hopefully, I've given you some ideas about visiting Halibut Cove and using it as a gateway to Kachemak Bay State Park. I love how you can eat a great meal and stay in a comfortable bed by the water right next to the park with its trails and sea kayaking. This last segment of the show is about the park itself and work that's going on now to plan its future. The previous parts of the show were recorded in Halibut Cove, but I caught up with my next guest in the studio in Anchorage. And with me now is Ira Edwards, who's been a guest on our show before. Ira's involved in an awful lot of things, and he's well known because he's in a wheelchair and does extraordinary outdoor stuff that way. But he's also a planner and works in trail planning and construction and many, many different roles, and so has a lot to do with Outdoor Explorer. Ira, you're a member of the team at DNR that's working on a new Kachemak Bay State Park plan. And this is one of our most loved, most used parks, and in a very local, very vocal community of Homer. Give us a quick overview of what this park planning process is, where you're at, and where you're going with it.
Yeah, so I work with the Department of Natural Resources at the state of Alaska, and I'm part of the planning team that is currently working on the state park management plan for Ketchumek Bay State Park. That is going to include both the state park and the state wilderness park. And the state wilderness park is pretty unique because it is the only wilderness park in Alaska. And that is a little W wilderness, not a big W wilderness. Mm-hmm. So it does not have all the restrictions that a federal wilderness has. But also we have a couple of sections up on the mainland in Cottonwood and Eastland Creek up on East End Road. And then there's a couple of recreation sites with the Evelyn Schuster property and then Diamond Creek Rec site. So those are all going to be contained in this large plan. Mm. We have gone through the scoping process last year to kind of determine with the public how they use the park, what they'd like to see, just general comments on how the park's been used. And we're currently working on getting some focus group meetings with various defined user groups like manufacturers or charter operators, things like that, and Nordic Ski Club, bicycle clubs, just various people that have used the park in the past, but maybe we'd like to see it used differently or that. And we're looking with tourism operators to see how we can help promote the park because, as we all know, the state budgets are lower. So if we can create good public interest in the park, there'll be a lot more public support for keeping the park managed well.
Yeah. So the park is already pretty well loved and beloved. It's had some issues over the years with, finding money for trail maintenance and finding money to, you know, maintain the dock in Halibut Cove Lagoon and those sorts of things. But you're looking you're looking sort of the big picture, far future, like changes of use of the park, right? It's not more so much the maintenance stuff.
Yeah, we're not exactly going to be doing day-to-day operations. Mm-hmm. With the dock, I know they got a grant from the State Trails Program to build a new dock. That's a water trail, so that's kind of
okay,
that.
Okay, cool.
And some of the other features in the park State Parks has applied for some of the grants to actually help build and maintain some of the trails that are there. But the planning process is more the 30,000-foot view. Mm-hmm. What should legally be allowed to be done with state land? These are the generally allowed uses. We're going to have a table, a matrix that kind of tells you this is allowed, this is not allowed. So we want to try to determine from the 30,000-foot view how to manage the park use. We will leave the day-to-day operation to the local managers and the local ranger, but we want to give an outline that, and this will become a regulation. It'll become adopted by the state as policy. So we want to give whoever the future employees are for the next 20 or 30 years a guideline on how to use the park, how to manage the park.
So what are the biggest issues you've picked up on in terms of potential changing uses of the park?
Yeah, and back to that, we're not so much looking to change how it's used, more to refine how it's used.
Okay.
And a big thing is bicycling. Mountain bikes didn't exist when the park plan was created back in the first plan back in the 70s. In the 90s, there were some mountain bikes. But snow bikes especially, those are great for beaches and snow trails. They don't cause a lot of damage if used appropriately, but those didn't exist the last time. So that's a huge recreational use in Anchorage and especially on the Kenai Peninsula. They've been selling bikes like crazy for use on trails and on beaches.
Mm-hmm.
Before I got hurt, I rode all the way down from Soldotna to Homer on the beach pretty much.
Wow, cool.
It was a few-day camping trip. But those uses didn't exist. Some of the other uses, there's just big discussions about personal watercraft. Those were banned back in the late 80s.
Jet skis, in other words.
Yeah,
jet skis. That's what everybody calls them. Yeah.
Everyone knows them as a jet ski. That's a Kawasaki brand.
Okay.
No brands endorsed here.
So they haven't been able to be used pretty much as long as they've been around, as far as I know.
In
the Ketchumek Bay Critical Habitat area, is that what it's called?
Exactly, the mm-hmm. Ketchumek Bay Critical Habitat area. By Fish and Game, with Governor Tony Knowles, banned the use of personal watercraft in the Ketchumek Bay Critical Habitat area. Now those waters are also included on the north side of the park. So those, by the fact that there's waters are there, you can't use a jet ski, so you can't use one to go in the park. Some state agencies have determined there's no biological reason for that ban, so that ban is under discussion right now. So that's a huge issue for the park management because it'll possibly create more access, and that would be good from one perspective that we'd have more people be able to recreate in the park. Not everyone has a big boat. Maybe some people only have jet skis or they go to Big Lake or whatever, and they want to go access or go fishing. So that might be a new aspect of that. Another big one is helicopter landings. There's been helicopter landings for most of the creation of the park, but some people have applied for permits to do helicopter skiing, which is, I personally love skiing. I'm a huge skier. Mm-hmm. But it created a tremendous amount of comments. So we're going to work on, is it an appropriate use to allow heli skiing in the park? So those are the
kind
of things.
Because of the noise issues, I imagine.
Yeah, not just the noise, but people worry about the habitat. They worry about the wildlife. So But those are things that have been existing in the park. For example, Homer Electric has used helicopters mm-hmm. since their inception to haul gear across the bay.
Right.
So it's not a new use. It would be a new type of the same use.
Maybe more intensive, yeah.
Yeah, so.
So how do you make these decisions? I mean, you gather information, you hear from the public, you have lots of points of view. It seems like you're in the middle of something that's a little bit like value-based and intangible as to how you would make that decision.
So we are based on legal terms for sure. We look at the state statutes and current regulations to see what we're currently allowed to do. A lot of proposals and ideas have come that are not allowed by state statute, so that's not even in the ballgame.
Mm-hmm.
And then we talk with the public. We did scoping. We look with focus user groups to determine what they would like to have happen in the future. And then we see if we can do those things. But then we'll also deal with internal stuff. Park management. Is it feasible to allow us to have 100,000 users a year in this spot? I mean, it might be cool. It might not damage the environment, but can we manage it? So we have to look at our logistics as well. Or if we build trails, you still have to maintain them. So we kind of think what we can maintain, what we can build, and still allow the public to increase use in the park.
Are you considering new trails down there?
Yeah, there's quite a few new trails. I'm currently working with one of the park specialists, Eric, down there on the trails plan. And yeah, we've got a few new trails, maybe some foot trails that are now going to become more developed trails. So they can become multi-use in the winter for skiing or snow biking. And a few new connector trails. There's a lot of trails in the Kachemak Bay State Park that are individual by themselves. We'd like to make a trail system so we can connect some of them.
But you're kind of writing them on a piece of paper, and then if money came, they would be built. Because, I mean, the trails there, a lot of them are overgrown at this point.
Yeah, the plan is not a mandate for construction.
Right.
The plan is something that could be allowed to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So we are not saying we're going to build trails, but if we don't plan for it, we cannot build them. So we determine a framework of what we're allowed to do in the park. But also we have a wish list. I mean, there'd be nice to have a public use cabin or two in some other locations apart from Halibut Cove.
Mm-hmm.
It might be nice to have a trail going to the south end of the park so you can access the wilderness. I mean, wilderness is, like I said, is a little W, so
yeah.
We can have responsible development in the wilderness. And trails, keeping them in a confined area, is a lot more responsible than having a lot of social trails and campsites all over the beach. If we can find the use, it's going to be a little more less damaging to the environment. So
neat. So how can people interface with the project, find out what you're thinking about, get their input in?
So at alaskastateparks.org is the state parks planning site. And I work for DNR, so a different division mm-hmm. in state parks. But on the top of that page, there is a tab that says current plans under review. And under there, we have Kachemak Bay State Park. There's a couple other park plans that are under review right now.
And we'll make sure to have that linked from outdoorexplorer.org yeah. too. So
far. And all the details are there. So when there's a comment period, we'll have, hopefully in the next year or so, a public review draft that's available. And then the public can look at it and give comments for a comment period. And yeah, we definitely try to allow the public to participate as much as possible because they're the park users. So it's great. Not just a state operation.
Well, thanks so much. Ira Edwards, he's with DNR, works on a lot of different issues about trails and uses trails quite a bit, and a frequent guest on Outdoor Explorer. Thanks so much for being here, Ira.
Thanks, Charles.
That's all for today's show. Besides Ira, we heard at the top of the hour from Halibut Cove pioneer Clem Tillion. Then I talked to large and water taxi owners Tammy and Carl Jones, and Marion Beck, owner of the Saltry Restaurant. My thanks to all of them. And if you want to learn more, check out our website at outdoorexplorer.org and click on today's show. Eric Bork is our producer. My name is Charles Wolforth. I'll see you outside.
Outdoor Explorer is a production of KSKA Public Radio in Anchorage, Alaska. Theme music is by Portugal the Man. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect the station or its underwriters. You can find Outdoor Explorer on Facebook and on iTunes. To see what's coming up on Outdoor Explorer and add your voice to the conversation, go to our website at alaskapublic.org.
Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.